Hello, this is Dr. John Davis, back again to talk to you about personality, part two. No so-called model of personality is totally correct. We discussed that a little bit in the first segment, and that's why they're called models of personality or theories and not truth. But a model can stand the test of time if it has some truth in it, or if it's useful in some way to people. So that's why I think it's a good idea to study or look at each theorist and see who you like, who resonates with you. Then you want to focus on that one for a while and find your particular explanations of why you do what you do, or why the people around you do what they do. And then you want to use their language to understand and see what's happening, and see if that model works for you. We need language in order to be able to understand why people do what they do, and the more of a particular language that is involved in a particular model we have and understand, then the more explanations and the better explanations we have for what's happening. It's difficult to do that with only the trait theory in your bag of tricks. You need to look at people, we need to look at people, through these models, and then we can understand why people do what they do. And even if our understanding is not completely correct, even if some of the model is off base a bit, still, we have a way of looking at things that works for us. And these models do work. They have stood the test of time. Well, I like to give you something practical in each segment that we do, and something you can use in your daily life, so let me tell you what's coming in this segment that may be of use to you. You're going to see some ways to understand and deal with children's misbehavior. You're going to see maybe a little tweak that you can make in your communications with your partner or your spouse. So look for those hints coming up in a few minutes from some of these theorists we're going to talk about today. We talked about Freud last time, and in this segment, we're going to consider Alfred Adler, Carl Rogers, and just a little bit about B.F. Skinner. Adler first. I was trained as an Adlerian psychologist. My major professor at Georgia State University was Dr. Roy Kern. And Dr. Roy Kern has done a lot of research on what Adler called the lifestyle interview, and this was his major therapy technique, Adler's major therapy technique. My dissertation was in that area, and particularly on the lifestyle interview. And the lifestyle, as Adler understood it, needs a little bit of explaining before I can give you the more practical information. You can easily understand Adler's ideas if you grasp two basic assumptions that he made about people. The first one is, he assumed that we're all different. That's not particularly earth-shaking in and of itself, but the way we're different is earth-shaking. He said that we all have a different view of the world. That is, we all draw different assumptions about the world, and therefore, in a way, we all live in a different world. A minor example of that would be, say, how dangerous you think the world is. Adler says we all assume that the answer to that is absolute and consistent between people. But the truth is, it's purely an individual perception. Recent research supports this idea. We all have very different ideas about almost anything, but we think that most people think like we do. Well, Adler called his personality theory individual psychology because he felt we all live in our own individual worlds. And these so-called worlds are just a basic set of assumptions, is what they are. Therapy amounted to helping a client see what his or her assumptions are and whether or not those assumptions help them or hurt them, and then how to change them if it appears that is needed. A lifestyle interview helps the therapist identify those assumptions and that basic worldview. And then when that is exposed to the client, when it's explained that is how they are viewing the world and that is different from how other people see it, then often they can change their view and some of their behavior as a result of hearing that, as a result of the insight, and really don't need very much therapy. Well, now the fun begins. He felt like that we draw these conclusions about the world in childhood, and to a great extent based on birth order. Other influences are parenting and later on our peers, but Adlerians themselves have done very little research in this area, but there's a lot of other research that supports their ideas. For example, firstborns tend to be more responsible, also more bossy, maybe more likely to be teachers or supervisors, managers, nurses, pilots. There are way more firstborn presidents than any other position, and so on. Secondborns are more likely to take risks than firstborns. It's another thing that we know from the research. And you may know it from your own personal experience that your younger brother or sister or your older brother or sister is different from you in that area. You can see why it might happen. Parents, Adler would say, in fact, that we don't have the same parents, the firstborn and the secondborn. By the time the secondborn comes along, the parents have changed how they respond to the child, and particularly how they respond to minor dangers like falling and things like that. Now it's more like, I'll get up, you're all right, instead of with the firstborn, it was run over and help them up. And so that sort of thing is quite a bit different with the secondborn, and they develop a different attitude toward taking risks and toward their bodies in general. First study of this that I saw was of fighter pilots in the Korean War. There were more firstborn fighter pilots, but the secondborns performed better. At least more of them were what are called ace pilots, more than 5 shoot downs of enemy planes. And why would that be? If you think about it, and what I just said a minute ago, secondborns might enter a fight that a firstborn would not enter. Firstborns would be more cautious. I don't have the data on that, and particularly, whether or not they're more cautious, and whether or not that was the reason, but I would bet that a greater percentage of secondborns were shot down also. And don't have the data on that, but for the same reason. They're more daring and they would be more likely to enter situations that would get them in trouble. Well, Adler often talked about these individual beliefs that make up our individual psychology as goals, individual goals. Some are mistaken and others are not. A mistaken one, for example, might be that you want to try and please all the people all the time. If this is your goal, then you're going to be disappointed. You're setting yourself up for disappointment because you're going to be very busy watching others to see if they are pleased with you when your brain would be better occupied doing something else. That's just one example of the kind of mistaken beliefs or individual goals that Adler and his followers would point out. There are a great many others, and of course, there aren't exactly types. Adler would do therapy with people and try to find out a lot about them and their childhood, and then pull the whole conglomeration of information together into what he would call their lifestyle. Well, I've been discussing Adler's first assumption that we all live in a different world, our own world. The second of his assumptions was that our assumptions and goals are social in nature. That is, we're probably, with most of our behavior, maybe all of our behavior, all about trying to find our place in whatever group we're in. Another way to say this is that most of our behavior is designed to establish ourselves or reach a particular goal. A good example of that is the so-called rebel. Very soon, when a rebel enters a new group, they're going to attempt to show everyone what a rebel they are. The pleaser, for example, on the other hand, will go around trying to make everyone like them as soon as they can. And a dominating person, another kind of lifestyle, will soon try to take charge of a group that they enter. So all of them view the group and their life in it differently. And it's, you know, no wonder that whenever two or more are gathered together, there's going to be trouble with all these different lifestyles competing. Where Adlerians have had their greatest impact, probably, is in child rearing. Or dealing with children in general, like teachers, for example, parents, of course, and school counselors. Here's why. Adler and his student Rudolf Dreikers identified four goals of misbehavior in children, and these are very useful. I found them extremely useful in talking to parents about why their children misbehave. So knowing what you do about Adler, you'll assume correctly that these goals have something to do with children finding their place in the family or finding their place later on in school, and that these goals are social in nature, and they are. Rudolf Dreikers, his student, and Adler said that children misbehave for one of these four reasons, these following four goals. One is attention, two is power, three is revenge, and four is withdrawal, or to be left alone. And when I do counseling with parents, I help them determine which one the child is seeking, which one of those four, and then we talk about what to do about it. But you have to know the goal first, because the solution to the problem is going to depend on what the goal is. You wouldn't use the same solution for a child who's interested in power or revenge as one who is interested in attention. All right, so the misbehavior of children then is going to be dealt with in a different way. And Rudolf Dreikers wrote a book in, I think, 1956, called Children the Challenge. You can still get your hands on that book if you're interested in kids. It has a lot of good solutions to typical problems in it, and still relevant today. Let me give you an example of how something might be done using an Adlerian approach. I had a mother come to me after a parent education group that I was running many years ago. And she said, "Look, I can't wait for the next segment of this group. I've got a problem that's bothering me now, and it's serious, and I need help. I can't wait for 8 weeks until we get through with this group." I said, "Well, what's going on?" She said, "Well, my child is having temper tantrums all the time, constantly, and I'm dealing with them all day long. So I need to know what to do about it. Do you have an idea?" And I wasn't really ready to tell her at that point, because she wasn't going to be able to understand what I was going to say until she heard a little bit more of the theory. So I just asked her to go home and check and see how often the child was having temper tantrums. Well, she came back the next week and she had counted them each day, and the child was having about 13 temper tantrums a day. In other words, this woman was dealing with temper tantrums all day long. So I said, okay, I get it. We're going to go ahead and do something about this. And so the suggestion I had for it is one that I had taken from the book, Children the Challenge, that Rudolf Dreikers had mentioned. And let me say before I tell you what this is, that I determined that the goal of this child's misbehavior was attention, her attention, in fact, because when I asked her what she did when the child had the temper tantrum, she told me she had tried everything, and then she named the things she had tried, and they all involved her involvement, her attention in some way. So it was pretty obvious that that was the case, and also the child would stop as soon as he got her attention. And kids who are in a power contest or a revenge struggle won't necessarily stop whatever it is they're doing. So after determining that it was attention, then I could tell her to do what I'm about to let you know that I told her. But I would not have suggested this to a parent whose child was involved in revenge seeking or even power contests, because it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't work, for one thing. But the other thing is, you'll see in a moment why you could not do what I'm going to suggest to her with a child who's involved in destructive kind of behavior, which revenge-seeking children often are. Okay, so what I told her was to make a sandwich, put it in the bathroom, put a couple of magazines in there, and the very next time her child had a temper tantrum, go in the bathroom and lock the door. I said, now, do you know what he's going to do? She said, yeah, he's going to come to the door and have his temper tantrum there. I said, that's exactly right, and you know why, right? Because he wants you to see this. Temper tantrums have no purpose if people can't witness them. You ever try to have one by yourself? It just sort of fizzles out because there's nobody there to watch it. Well, she did this. She went home and carried out the plan. I told her to be sure to stay in the bathroom until the temper tantrum was over and then come out. And when it was over, go on about her business. Don't say anything to the child about the temper tantrum or anything else. Just go on about her business. Then the next time it happened, go back in. So she did. She followed through, and the next week she came back all smiles and told me, it's over. It is over. I no longer have to deal with temper tantrums. The first time this happened, she told me, the child banged on the bathroom door for 45 minutes before he stopped. And then she came out and went about her business. Second time it happened, she went back into the bathroom. This time, he banged on the door for about a half hour. Third time it happened, she went back into the bathroom, this time about 15 minutes. The fourth time it happened, she got up to go to the bathroom, and he jumped up off the floor. This is a four-year-old now. Jumped up off the floor and said, no, 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 you don't have to go. It's all right, I'm not going to do it. And so she said after that, it was over. What she had done is she had taken away his success, his goal. She had helped him, or rather arranged it so that he did not reach his goal of getting her attention with these temper tantrums. Now, don't forget that I am not saying that this is the solution to your problem with your child with temper tantrums. It may not be, especially if the child is destructive or belligerent. Would hurt somebody or something if you were to leave. In those cases, this is not the solution. All right. Well, there's a lot more we could say about Adler, like where did these theories come from, what's in a lifestyle interview. Lifestyle interview is what he does with individuals. And how do we approach couples counseling with him, that sort of thing. But I think I'll leave that for another time and perhaps a personality course that I'm going to teach later at AB Tech. And other things we could talk about are what more does birth order research tell us. But again, let's talk about that later. The next theorist that's worth mentioning here is B.F. Skinner. And I've talked about Skinner before, and I'm going to put podcasts on here that are specifically about him and about learning theory. But it's good to mention him at this point because he has something in common with Adler. They both felt that consequences to behavior determine the future occurrence of that behavior. And more than the unconscious or trauma from the past or anything else that the other theorists rely on as their reasons for why people do what they do, Skinner and Adler felt it was consequences. So he doesn't exactly, Skinner that is, have a personality theory as such, because he didn't even like the term. He felt that personality was simply a clump of similar behaviors, and it was more the person who was looking at the individual who clumped them that way more than it was the person themselves. He felt still that individual behaviors respond to consequences and didn't form necessarily a personality except so insofar as some of these behaviors are similar. Now, he has to be mentioned because he was so influential during the last century. On any list of the 100 most influential people, not just psychologists, he's there. He's always going to be there. There's a lot that's different these days in businesses, schools, homes, because of what he researched and taught. So check out future podcasts for more about him. The last group to talk about today, this podcast is running a little longer than usual, but I'd like to keep on because there's not much more, are the humanists. This is a group of theorists that developed or arose out of a reaction to the negativism of Freud and the sort of mechanistic aspects of Skinner's work. This happened about 1960 and includes people like Carl Rogers and Abraham Maslow. When couples come in for couples counseling, I usually use some preliminaries to get acquainted and then ask them to tell me why they're there. And then the wife will say, I'll talk about it, and then she'll go on and talk. And I'll pretty soon realize that the husband is not listening, and he'll interrupt her with something like, no, that's not how it happens. I don't do that. And so I'll interrupt him and ask him to wait until he's finished, until she's finished. Now, she'll go on with the story, but at this point, he's not listening. What's he doing? He's preparing his case. And so in his head, he's thinking of about what he's going to say when she stops. So this is what many of us do as we are supposedly listening to others. Carl Rogers, taught listening skills to his students who were going to be doing counseling, and essentially that's what he used in his therapy, was just good listening skills. He and other humanists have as a basic assumption that people know basically what to do. They have within them the ability to grow if they are in the right environment. And that environment is the environment of a good listener and someone who gives them what is called unconditional positive regard. Someone who views them positively no matter what they say or what they've done. It doesn't mean you necessarily approve of their behavior, and it's a tricky thing to pull off, but many counselors know how to do this, and you're trained to know how to do it, to not condemn the person because of a past behavior. So he felt, and the humanists in general feel, that that is the way to approach counseling and therapy. Well, they were critics, and maybe no one has ever been as good at his therapy as Carl Rogers himself, but it's another one of those theories that has stood the test of time, and every counselors, psychologists, get some training in good listening skills and how to listen. And it wouldn't hurt for every married couple to go through this training as well, so that they can begin to listen to each other instead of preparing their own case when they should be listening. All right. So thank you for listening. This is Dr. John Davis, and I will talk to you again later.